Now is the time.
Do not adjust your frequency. This is a message from the Resistance.
Hi, I'm Phil.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm John. Thanks for having me on.
And welcome to Organized Fun, the board game podcast, where this week we've got a mini-sode for you. Apologies, my voice is a bit croaky. I've got a bit of a cold. But I'm going to call it a listener's journey. But we've got no business first, so I'm just going to say, hi, John. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
And I guess we just have a couple of questions that we ask every new guest. What is your board gaming history? What is your gaming experience? Do you play a lot of games? Do you like them? Do you hate them? What's your story?
My board game history. I feel like I'm a board game collector more than a player. Own a bunch of different vintage board games. Lots of different stuff from like the 80s, Knight Rider, A-Team, and just pretty much any intellectual property that they threw a game out and see it on the shelf at a thrift store. Like, oh, that one's mine. But I definitely owned a lot more games than I ever played.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You get them to sort of display, or what you don't want to play though, in terms of you just rather sort of like the look of them, or is it what? Yeah, that's really interesting that you're sort of more of a collector than you wouldn't play. Or is it you want to keep them pristine?
No, I think it was more that I couldn't ever get people super interested enough to play too much. I had a big, shelf full of games, and I guess maybe a lot of the games weren't really good. They were just, they had a good aesthetic to them.
That's it. Yeah, that's the thing. Sometimes games just look amazing, don't they? Or they come with like special figurines or just the extra bits and pieces that come with it. And you're like, yeah, but they might not actually translate into the best games.
Totally.
Spontaneity is key.
Right, so John, you are here because you have like caned our entire back catalogue over the last sort of month or so, and you made some great notes and comments and questions. So this is your sort of listening journey through the Organized Fun back catalogue.
I was going to say, you sent this brilliant email with loads of notes of all the different things. I'm just going to say you've heard these more recently than I have, so I might not remember half the stuff that you're talking about, because I'm just told what to play in terms of what's on the spreadsheet, so I don't. But no, I was really interested that you mentioned Atmosphere, because I didn't even realize we've not done an episode on it, right?
No, we haven't.
You didn't.
But I don't know why. Is it so? It's not come up on the, well, I know why it's not come up on the spreadsheet.
No,
for whatever reason. Because there's the VHS version and there's a DVD version as well, isn't there? And various, I mean, it's gone on and on, hasn't it? So is that sort of like a particular memory of having that Atmosphere game for you?
Yeah, I didn't have it like in the 90s. I think I got it somewhere around 2000, but it was another one of those ones I got at a thrift store. And this particular thrift store is called, well, it's locally known as The Bins, where they have these bunch of big containers and they take all the stuff that didn't sell at the normal thrift stores or stuff that wasn't really sellable, and they just dump it into this big rolling cart. And then you get to dig through it and find what you want and buy it by the pound. And I found the VHS tape and the lid for the game sitting there. I was like, man, this looks really cool. And it spent like an hour digging around at the bottom of the barrel trying to find all these little keystones, and ended up with more than a full set somehow. So I think that whoever donated it had some extra pieces. But we took it home, put the VHS in, and it had this like, I don't know, 1990s looking, heavy metal dudes with skeleton faces, and they're like all sitting around playing a board game. It's like, you have to turn it up loud, decorate your room really super spooky. And so we were like, yeah, heck yeah. We got like a fog machine and a black light, strobe light, and just decorated the living room and set up this epic game. And then we just kept playing it, because like after the first two playthroughs, certain amount of time that they're gonna make you all change places or whatever. So you could up the replay value by trying to like memorize the tape and then like stalling, not rolling your dice until like, okay, 8:43, and then you roll, and then it's the next person's turn. It's like, stop, whose turn is it?
That's just mean.
That's clever. And that's funny that, because the DVD Atmosphere that I got from a boot sale, sort of similar. So maybe people just, why are people like donating their Atmospheres? Why aren't they keeping their Atmospheres?
Incidentally, I was in the board game shop the other week, and there is a whatever anniversary version of it, of like the classic, and it comes with a VHS and everything.
No way.
But it also comes with a download code, so you can, like, if you haven't got a VHS player, which who does these days, so you can access it online. But it's all like, it looks exactly the same as it did when it first came out, all the same artwork, but it was like
like 80 quid or whatever. So I was like, maybe not.
There was a, it's like a pyramid sort of Egyptian mummy version of it as well.
Yes.
Which I remember seeing at the boot sale at the same time, but I didn't get that one.
The idea was to do like an expansion for each of the Harbinger characters, all the, you know, but I guess they only got as far as the first one. But okay, you're right, John, you mentioned a black light and a fog machine. You just had those items just knocking about in your house, did you?
I did, yeah. Did a lot of music and video stuff, like, you know, short films, and played in a band with a bunch of friends. So we already had that kind of stuff sitting around.
That's like, it made it pretty easy. Yeah.
Also had in one room a bunch of TVs and a bunch of VCRs set up like a spaceship command center for doing those short films and stuff. It was pretty silly stuff. But yeah, so you guys talked about atmosphere in like one of the very first episodes, and it was just very casual mentions of it. And I was like, is that the same game? I can't tell. And then I went back and it's like, there wasn't an episode for it. And so like every time, like, you know, you did mention
it. It's
like,
on the spreadsheet. It is on there, right? It's on the spreadsheet, yeah?
I just checked the spreadsheet. It is coming up in 8 games time.
Oh, wow. Well, why is it taking so long? Why is it taking all this time?
Just because I guess we've got a few plays of it already.
The algorithm of the spreadsheet is unknown to me. I don't know how it...
Don't worry about it. I know how it works, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, I think right around year 4, you clarified it was like the progression of the game from the DVD, or from the VHS, the DVD, and then the app game. And I was like, at that moment, I was like, yes, that's the one. And then when you got to the Klingon challenge, my mind was blown because it sounded exactly like Atmosphere. Like the same dude was the Klingon, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
That episode just cracked me up for days.
You just bought a set, didn't you? You just bought a version.
I did, yeah. Immediately after listening to the episode, I went on eBay and was like looking for it and found a really good deal on one. It's still unopened, sitting on my shelf waiting for people to play it. But
although even your box is white and ours is black. I wonder what.
I don't know. But yeah, the black one, I guess, was the European version. Maybe it's a... I don't think they had different country codes for VHS tapes, but who knows?
Oh, no, maybe. Oh, they would have PAL and whatever the American...
NTSC for American. Yeah, yeah, maybe. Yeah. We should look into all of the like that genre of VHS game. There's got to be more. I can't think of any off the top. Did we talk about it? I see, this is what I don't remember that we've talked about. But there must be more. I can't think of any others. But there's like, where is that? I mean, you, in terms of like DVD games and stuff, it sort of went off to like all the CNITs and things and stuff like that. But I can't think of anything like Atmosphere where you just play the tape for the hour and things pop up. Yeah, I should go back to and have a look at that.
Yeah, there was one episode you guys did and you mentioned a bunch of different like VHS or video style games. And like there was the Captain Power or something that sounded pretty awesome where you get the toys.
The screen.
That was a good episode.
I don't remember that.
Nice.
Oh, I have the advantage. I've listened to it all within the last 2 months, so it's pretty fresh in my brain.
Yeah, it's more fresher for you. Yeah.
Yeah, so you will have heard a quite rapid change. Because, like, okay, hands up. Our first episodes are pretty shit. Like, how did you... You powered through.
I guess I didn't start at the very beginning originally. Riley had posted the Teens in Space. He had a playlist of those episodes. So I listened through those, and I'd already heard both of you guys on Bunkers and Badass podcast or Friend and Foe Adventure Co.
Yeah.
And so got a little bit of cross promotion there. But I think that what really kept me going was just, I don't know, like you guys just were having fun talking about stuff. And there I was at work, like on the, you know, in the dark, trying to do some whatevers and just, for, you know, hours on end, just it's either, you know, dead silence or me talking to myself. And then, you know, you guys just do such a great job. So entertaining, so many laughs, and just it was easy to get through. Maybe my attention span is a little short, and so you guys just have little clippets and snips, different things, you know, and it's all, you know, broken up into just little bits and pieces. And if I were to, like, if you guys were having like a long serious discussion, like, you know, maybe wouldn't have been able to focus as much, but still, like, the way you guys do it is just, I don't know, it's hilarious. Love it.
I mean it is, my attention span when we're playing a long game isn't great, so you're hearing hearing the edited highlights. You haven't gone through the hours of waiting for a game to be set up or something. Right. For me, I'm not a hater, by the way. I'm told I am, but I'm not.
Talking about haters, so John, the next bit in your thread of have you ever made a board game, is this when you started becoming a hater? So tell us about your fifth grade history project. What is the Northwest Passage?
All right. Well, the Northwest Passage was a fabled river or water route going from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean, North America. And there was rumors that there was a waterway instead of going all the way down below South America. And so a bunch of people went out exploring, trying to find that. And I don't remember the specific explorer's name, but I was assigned to do a project. And they gave a list of options, and one of them was make a board game. It's like, okay. So I, made a little board and drew all the spaces, and most of their trip was done in canoes. So I carved out little tiny canoes out of some modeling clay and did all that, put a lot of effort into it. And then, the day to present it came, and a few of the, classmates sat around and the teacher sat and played it. And the only feedback I got was that they couldn't play the game because of one of the spots said move back two spaces. But because of my handwriting, it said 20, they thought it said 25 paces. And for that, it made the game unplayable or unplayable, they said.
I don't think they were trying very hard to work it out.
But it was not a win. I think maybe I got, I didn't fail it, but I, got enough points to pass.
Well, maybe they probably just didn't frag it properly. They should have done the process.
If they only knew. But yeah, maybe that's when I started to become a hater. I, was thinking about that and got a little introspective, I should say.
I mean, yeah, we haven't. Which one did you make, Phil?
What do you mean? What? You can't remember. Charge Ball.
I can't remember what it's called. Charge Ball. That's it.
But which one did you make? Oh, you didn't ever.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, that's better. I know. Well, maybe you could revisit Northwest Passage, get a Kickstarter going, get it. Give it another try.
I will leave the spot that says 25 paces and they're out to deal with it.
Yes. Also, incidentally, so is it a real thing? It's not a real thing. There's no such thing as the Northwest Passage. Does it exist?
They never really found one. They think if you go way north where the ice is, you might be able to cut a path, but it doesn't exist.
Disappointing. See, you were destined to fail. Your game was destined to fail because it didn't exist.
How could it be a win? You're right.
Play what you feel.
Okay, right. I'm going next down the list. Mad Magazine game. Almost like a board game parody. You lose all of your money to win. Never heard of it.
No.
Do you have Mad Magazine over there?
No.
No.
What is it?
All right.
Mate, I'm going to Google it.
Mad Magazine.
Is it an actual magazine?
It's an actual Mad Magazine from, I think it started in the 60s, maybe. It's a parody comic book style where they spoof on movies or pop culture. And I think they even made a TV show, Mad TV.
Oh, right. Right. It's a bit like
Spitting Image.
I was going to say the image. It's like Spitting Image. Those sort of caricature cartoon type things. Wow, is that still going?
I don't think so. I think they might have some sort of digital thing now, but I don't think they still release magazine anniversary editions or whatever supermarkets.
So was this game? So this was a card game, and that was produced by the people that produced the magazine. I guess
they had a card game, but the one I was particularly fond of was the board game. And had a typical board similar to Monopoly, but you go around the outside, but you could also go places inside. But it had some really funny things to do. Like one of them was you draw a card and the card says act like a rock. If you are a good rock, lose $1. If you are a bad rock, gain $5. And I forgot to mention that the whole point of the game is to lose all your money.
Okay. I'm just Googling it now. I think there's some on eBay.
Really?
Just having a look. If it's mad, this is vintage 1979 Mad Magazine board game. Would that be it?
Sounds right. Yep.
Around that time. Yeah, there's a few on eBay. Yeah. You can see there's. Okay. I wonder if you can track that down. So you'd say that was a win?
Back in the day, definitely was a win. It's just lots of silly stuff to do, not just the typical, roll the dice and move your token, as most of the games I had seem to be.
Yeah, it's very Monopoly like, isn't it? Yeah, the layout is very. It's got a jail corner. Oh, look, everyone moves one chair to the right, change money with the person on your left. left. We'll have to have a keep an eye out for that one. But no,
it's
yeah,
it's a pretty funny one.
Never come across that. Yeah.
What was the thing you said was like Mad Magazine?
Spitting Image.
Spitting Image. That's a TV show from the '80s. Here with it's only because and it's like a puppet show, but the puppets look exactly like that style of how the people are drawn in the magazine. That sort of big head. You know what I mean? So that was sort of the '80s, nineties here, and it came back on. Might have come back on Netflix for like no BritBox for a series recently. That's the kind of it's that kind of style of artwork. I mean, looking at on eBay, I'm not sure if I like that artwork. That would not pass a good frag for me. But the gameplay looks fun, but the aesthetic is very stylized of its own thing. Yeah, that's not getting a pass on aesthetic for me, just from what I can see.
Fire transcends order.
Next thing is chess episode. Chess 2000. When I first read that in your email, I was like, ooh, interesting. But then the description of it, so what, it's just normal chess on a wiggly board.
Exactly. And I had the same reaction as you did. The box had like a spaceship on it, you know, stars and all sorts of like Star Wars ripoff font and all that. And it said, the best improvement on chess in over 2000 years. And then you open it up and it's just like the very, very standard, you know, chess pieces, like the hollow plastic ones that you'd get with that, you know, 50 games set or whatever.
Disappointing.
Oh, definitely. But, you know, you had one spot on the board, or one side of the board was the standard 8x8 chess board, but then you flip it over and it was just all these wiggly lines with very odd shapes. Some of them like super pointy, so it didn't even look like squares at some point, but it said that you swoop in as a, you know, stealth fighter jet and attack your opponent. Wait, I don't get it. It's just wiggly lines.
I mean, there's a reason why chess has been the same for like 2000 years. You can't improve on it. It's chess. Chess is always just chess, apart from having cool different like shapes and stuff, I suppose. But yeah, you can't really change anything else, I don't think. No, that does not sound good.
Some genius marketer decided like, man, this is going to sell big, and I don't think it did.
No, but like we've had a few games like that, haven't we? Where like it's described, you know, oh, lots of double bluffing and strategy and you sneak in and do the other, and it's like, no, I'm just playing a card or I'm just choosing a number. Like, there's none of that. They're trying to like dupe you into thinking that you're in this super complex, exciting process. It's like, no, I'm just rolling a dice, actually.
The only thing you can improve for chess would be once they invent like holograms that can like walk on their own, like in Star Wars and stuff, where it's, we need that technology before chess gets improved, I think. Nothing else is going to be, everything else is just going to be like pieces on a board.
True.
I'm still waiting for that. True. It's going to happen someday.
One day. Yeah. That will be chess space. Chess 2000. Chess 3000, probably.
You will not conform.
Okay, right. I'm moving on. Obscure weird games. Why did they make the game Doggy Do? I completely agree. I think there's this
oh my God.
Slew of like weird games, you know, pick up the poo, pulling bogeys out of someone's nose and chucking shit at things. Like,
there's so many, isn't there? Like in every shop you go in, there is a that genre of games. Toilet strange games. Isn't it?
I guess small children find it funny, do they?
But do they?
I don't know what it is. I think it's ever since the poo emoji was a thing, that is where it came from, I think. And then it's just, yeah, because we played Who Did It? Is that what it's called?
Yes. Well, so, John, you put, is Who Did It a real game? Yes, it is. And I will prove it.
When you guys did that episode, I was super skeptical. I was like, that can't be real.
Who did it?
It does exist.
And there's the fish.
Yeah. Narratively suspect, but it is a real game.
I feel like there is a company that's just like, right, we've got all these games, and then it's someone's job just to swap out and put poo in that game. Like any game, that's what it is. There's no poo chess yet, but wait, there will be.
I'm going to Google poo chess.
Make sure your safe search is on.
Yeah.
No, it's not a genre that is appealing, really. But they are quite simple games, these ones as well, of that kind of thing. They have, I mean, that's what they've done. They've just swapped out quite a simple card game or a game mechanic that's quite simple and just put poo in.
I found poop checkers, but not poop chess. So there you go. There's a,
well,
there's,
I suppose, yeah, it's easier. They're more, checkers are more like poos, I suppose, than like chess. You'd have to have like lots of tall.
Yeah, you'd have to have different styles. Make your own rules. Okay, right, next thing. Have we played Redemption, the religious game? No, we have not. Pitch it to us. Love a bit of a religious game, don't we?
I think it's called Redemption, the City of Bondage. And you have a little board with a bunch of little houses on it and a deck of cards. And there's some weird formula in the rule book. And it's like each player rolls the dice. And then depending on the total, you get to place different cards in a different pattern on the houses. But you get to choose one hero, and it's a biblical hero. And you have to rescue lost souls throughout the town and battle with evil forces. And I don't think it's that great of a game, technically, but being able to, like, having the right people to play with really made it a win, I think. I'm trying to remember. It's been so many years since I played it. It's like, I might have to try to see if my friend still has it, but it's...
I'm just looking it up, though. I can see a picture of it.
It looks really good.
You are called to arm yourself with the spiritual armor necessary to defeat the hordes you will encounter within the walls of the city. Each evil character you encounter will be vulnerable to either faith, wisdom, or deed. Located in the center of all this evil is the city's crystal well, a bright open place which provides miraculous healing powers for embattled heroes to rest and recover.
Oh, that's right. You get the hit chips. Then if you have too many hit chips, you can't fight and you have to go to the center of town and get your blessings and have the hit points removed.
Nice.
My friend had a very religious upbringing. So I think that was one of the few games that he was allowed to play. And so he got really, really into it. And then later on, as I guess a lot of times it happens when you have too strict of a upbringing, you kind of go off the rails in another direction, maybe. But he's a pretty silly guy.
Is this from when we played, I mean, I'm trying to think, is it Prince Caspian? Did we talk about religious games then? Was that?
I think.
That's the nearest, I'm just trying to think, that's the nearest in terms of religious games that we've played. The Narnia game, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that sounds about right.
That's what it was. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm just looking, there's copies of that on eBay as well. Take your turn
against oppression. All right, the next comment in your listener journey, John, concerns me. Made it to the 55th episode, then started listening to recent episodes as they came out on Spotify, then back to Apple Podcasts to the classics. What? How did you cope with being so chaotic, listening out of order?
Well, you only put out one new episode a week, and so when I showed that, or that showed up on Spotify, I'd hit play, but then kept the chronological episodes on Apple Podcasts so I didn't get mixed up. I didn't lose my spot.
No, that makes sense. But still, like, what if we did spoilers to stuff?
I was worried about that, and I'm glad that I didn't get any. No. I think most of what I heard, I think there was the figure painting episode and then several of the country bait episodes. So there wasn't any spoiler. Shuffle
your destiny. Right, what's next? What would it be like if they made a Dungeons & Dragons movie now? We didn't do an episode, but it's on my to-watch pile, so when we get to it, we'll
We did mention that, didn't we? Planned. Yeah.
You had that episode about movie games and said, I wonder what it would be like if they made a D&D movie now. I was like, oh, but they did. But then I realized that I never even watched any of the other ones or the new one, so I can't really be disappointed that you guys didn't do an episode on it, not personally, or mention it at least.
Is that Monopoly movie coming out? If I just imagine there's a Monopoly movie.
I'm sure it was.
We mentioned that.
On the cards.
I wonder, maybe
cards,
it's still in development, isn't it?
I can't imagine it being very good, surely.
I feel like there's always a Monopoly movie in the works.
I love how we're all just instantly getting onto Google.
Oh, Monopoly movie from Margot Robbie. Yeah, I bet. Is that real? I reckon there will be soon, at some point.
Fair enough.
Trying to imagine what that would be like. Like someone walking around buying real estate and they find a shoe and their dog's with them or something.
It depends. Yeah, it depends if they lean into a sort of meta world. Like, it depends if it's like, yeah, that it's something just set in the world with the theme of it, or they go completely out where Jumanji style, maybe.
Yeah. I reckon it's got the Oscars written all over it.
Then everyone will go Monopoly. If there is a Monopoly film, though, that's when there'll be tons of new versions of Monopoly. Not that I mean, how many more Monopolies can there be in the world? There's so many. Surely that is like the most adapted game in terms of, you can get like your local town, can't you, Monopoly everywhere. There's so many, isn't there?
Yes.
Definitely.
What are your general Monopoly thoughts?
So you played Monopoly a fair amount, I think. And at one point I thought I had a strategy, this is when I was younger, where I would take $500 out of my starting money and like either hide it in my pocket or slide it under the board and then pretend like I was poor the whole time. I don't know if it was to get sympathy. It never really panned out. It never really gave me any advantage. But like when I was almost broke, I'd like pull that $500 out from underneath the board. Like, I'm buying that space. And they're like, wait, what? And then one time my mom accused me of cheating, said I stole the money from the bank. And so it's like, I don't know, not a good strategy. It doesn't do anything.
No.
I feel like all Monopoly games are sort of doomed to go that way, aren't they? Just in terms of like...
I think I even, like when they had the, you know, computer version of Monopoly, the first one I got, I was playing it and I kept losing. So every once in a while I'd change the computer character to manual control and make them like either lose a bunch of money and then like switch them back to computer. And it didn't seem as fun, you know?
What's next?
Onirim.
Oh, yeah.
Onirim. Do you have thoughts on Onirim?
Only what I've gathered from you.
Okay.
No actual experience, or I never even really looked it up, but in my mind, it's pretty legendary the way you guys have built it up. And I know it went from being this absolute lose to like, you know what? Maybe that's a great game.
I think it's because it just took a while. It takes a while to get into that. It's so different in terms of all the symbols and the design of it all and everything. And even just the mechanics of those games. And I think the first time I played them all, I just really did not understand what was going on. I think that's what it is. But after a few, it's one of those ones you just have to play a couple of times, I think. And once you get into it and you sort of understand what it's about, it is actually amazing. Yeah, I think that is the one that I've totally changed my mind on completely. I really didn't like it at the beginning. But so if anybody hasn't tried Onirim, or you have tried it, try it again, I would say. And maybe a couple of times. And again and again. And then you'll like it.
Is there a particular one that's best to start with?
I mean, I can't tell them apart, so you'll have to say. What's the one with all the little, it's got like, they're all like little circles and it's not a board and you just have to place all the counters in like a weird shape.
Oh,
and the
boat Nautilion. Goes around.
Nautilion.
Yeah.
Is probably the most straightforward one to start with, I'd say.
Yeah. No, fair enough.
Yeah.
Right. Minisode 28, Mark said shit. That's the first swear word.
Really?
Ooh, yeah.
Okay.
It was the first one that I heard you say since you guys talked about how Mark doesn't swear. Phil, you were saying that Mark does. Mark, you said that you don't. You're like, no, do I? And so after that moment, I started listening and then it was very sparse. I think you were talking about top 100 board games, or you were trying to list 20 of them. And when Connect 4 was mentioned, you're like, oh, shit.
It's not in like, not like anger in terms of like, oh, I hate Onirim. No, I'm gonna swear about it. Yeah, it's not. I see what you mean. Yeah, I'm not aware of it.
It was definitely more reaction than
anything else. Yeah, and that's quite good for a hater, supposedly. You'd think I would swear more about the games I don't like, but no.
That's true. Okay, right. Next big thing, Candyland. We have on numerous occasions. So obviously, we just don't know Candyland. Can't get it here. We've never played Candyland. So is this something that every American kid grows up with? What do you do? Why is it so good?
I think it's just the most basic board game, like very simple rules that you don't even have like a numbers to deal with. You have your card that you get has a colored space on it and you move to that next color, but it's all, you know, bright and, you know, themed with candy. There's a, you know, peppermint person standing there with all sorts of candy, just like, you know, drawn onto the board. There's like a pudding monster and the sugar queen or something like that, but it's, you know, all very iconic, very simple. And you could, like, there was like certain symbols on the card that relate, or on the cards that related to the different characters that were placed throughout the board. And there was one card in particular, if you drew that card like at the very beginning, you go all the way to like, you know, five spaces till the end of the board. So essentially you could win in like two or three moves. And it's just, I don't know, it's super simple, super fun, very themed at kids. But when I heard that you guys had never even seen it or played it, it just blew my mind. It was completely confusing to me. And I just like, I don't understand. I'm really sorry, you guys. Not that it would do any good now.
Well, I'm just looking at this. I'm on eBay again. Maybe we'll have to track a copy down.
But is it basically just whoever gets going around to the end of the track wins?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. We don't really have an equivalent over here of something like that.
No, I can't think of any games that we have that America just doesn't at all.
No,
don't know. Right, I can answer your next question. Were Pogs ever popular in Europe?
Yes.
Yes. Pog. I didn't know. Yeah, like I used to collect. Have you got some?
I have. I've bag of limited edition Jim will paint it Pogs.
Nice. I used to get them Pogs of the World Tour. Used to collect those ones with.
Yeah.
Is that little character got a name? That little like.
He was like a little
fuzzy pog like, guy.
Yeah. There was him all around the world. I used to get those ones. I had Space Precinct ones as well. Oh, and Spider-Man, like the animated series. I think I had some Batman animated series ones as well. And I had a Pog Maker as well.
That was like a Pog Maker too.
Like, yeah, it was really cool. You bought like these, they were like sticky, they were like circular and there was like sticky something. And you put like, I don't know, magazine or something in it. And then just, yeah, you just stamp your own Pog. Yeah. Did you ever actually play the actual game though?
Like secondary school, we used to play Pogs in the playground at lunchtime.
No, I never played, I just collected them.
Yeah.
See, I never wanted to lose them. I never wanted to damage them.
No, that's the thing, because you had the plastic things, didn't you? And you're supposed to like slam them.
Slammers.
And then they would get dented and stuff, wouldn't they? So, no, I never used to. I had like an album thing and a special Pog album, and you could slot them all in. I've got them somewhere. I've got pages of Pogs, but they sort of went away really quickly, though, didn't they? After there was like, it was definitely like a very. They shone brightly for a short amount of time. Everyone was like Pogs, weren't they?
There was a World Pog Federation.
Oh, I bet they're not around anymore. Or they're very, like, there's like one person.
Just they was.
Are they, what kind of ones did you have in America? What kind of themed Pogs were they?
It sounds like it was pretty much the same. I feel like I even had the Batman, the animated series ones. I had the entire collection of the Simpsons Pogs. There was a brand of them. I think they were called Poison. And they had like glossy eight balls with like spiders and skulls and just like all sorts of like very 90s, like super cool stuff. Like, I guess the eight ball was really popular back then.
Do you remember then, or maybe we talked about this as well at the time, the Tazos?
Yes.
Which were the same as like Pogs, thin plastic though, with ridges in, and they would connect so you could sort of build stuff with them.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't know if they were actually things that you bought, because they were, you get them in packets of crisps over here, in Walker's crisps, Tazos. And I'm not sure if that was just a way, like, so we don't get sued by Pog, but they were exactly the same, and you could, there were square ones as well after a while, so there were square bits of plastic and you could build cubes and things with them, and they were usually like Looney Tunes ones and stuff, but we always got them in packets of crisps over here. I don't know, and there was Star Wars ones as well. I've got a book with a load of Star Wars ones in, but they sort of followed very closely after Pogs, but I've only ever known the sort of crisp packet ones. And maybe they weren't a thing that you can buy. I don't know. If anybody knows about Tazos, get in touch.
Do Pogs count as a game? Like, maybe not a board game? Is it?
Yeah, I'd say it's like a, I don't know, it's the same. It's on the same line as like marbles. It's something that you play outside, isn't it? That you.
Yeah, well, would they go on the spreadsheet?
Yeah, I reckon.
We should do an episode. We should play Pogs. We should actually play actual Pogs. I don't, whatever the rules are, I don't know. A point. There must be like a point system or something. I don't know.
No, don't you? You smash the slammer on them.
You smash the slammer.
They flip over, you get to keep them. Isn't
is that,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're so all how many do you have?
Any
though?
That you flip up. Face down, you get to keep, I think.
But the World Pog Federation would have had like a rule sheet, I'm sure to say you have to have this many Pogs, this type of slammer, this type of thing. Maybe we should make a note and look that up, because yeah, I love Pogs actually. Bring back Pogs.
Yeah. Okay, right, I'm moving on. Next, so I apologize then. So the next bit is while you're listening to Kids on Brooms, me just shouting.
Oh man. All right. So like I was saying, I listen to a lot of podcasts at work, and usually I'll have like one earbud in and just be listening away. And at the end of the day, I got in my car and started my car up, and then podcast automatically switched over playing on my car stereo. I started driving home, still listening. And at some point, I think I paused the music in my car, probably because I couldn't hear well enough and the road noise was just drowning everything out. And then I, you know, parked my car, opened the door at the grocery store, and all of a sudden, in my, you know, right behind me, I hear someone say, "Some hair gel? What are you, a lesbian?" And it's like, wait, what? It just like startled me to, I don't know, just like, I kind of, you know, physically looked around, jerked, and it's like, what the heck's going on? But then I realized it was just Phil doing a voice from one of the characters, and it just like was almost frightening, but it instantly made me just start cracking up there in the parking lot.
Well, that's good. I apologize. Yeah, I'm glad, like the Centaur voice, I can't remember the Centaur voice, but the Wax song, I did write. The Wax song, that is my very own creation.
That part was really good. I think I listened to that little section like at least 4 times just to try to pick up all the little nuances of the song and everything. It was just well done. Thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, what's next? Right, Elevenses sounds fake. No, Elevenses is real as well.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, again, there's a whole other genre of like tea and cake games out there. You just need to know where to look. But no, yeah, Elevenses is
real. So, okay, you've listened to the whole back catalogue. How many times have we done a fake game? I can't remember. Have you managed to guess any of them?
No, I didn't guess any of them. I think we did three of them.
I feel like we've done three, yeah.
And do you reckon we've done the fake game this year or not yet?
See, I can't say. Everything that seems even a bit out of the norm has been so so suspicious ever since you mentioned that. It's just like trying to listen to the, you know, your guys' banter, and the characters' names almost seem like they give them away sometimes, but just like with the 11 C's, that sounded pretty fake. And like the bit about milk you guys were talking about, I forget what it was, but it was just, I don't know, for that to be a real game was kind of mind-blowing.
But if I'm looking for like a new game or something, or if I'm just online just sort of thinking, like, it's those type of ones that don't sound real are the ones that I'm like, oh, I want to give that a try. That's what like attracts me to like 11. I'm like, okay, let's try, see what this game is like. They're the kind of ones that stand out to me more if it just sounds really unusual or like some weird theme that you wouldn't normally get. So that's why I try and like find those kind of different ones. How do you find new games? Is it just sort of searching online or recommendations, or just going into like a shop and just seeing what looks interesting?
For me, I think
a particular genre.
I think I buy a lot based on the IP. You know, if it's a movie or a TV show or something that I like, I'll get it. And that's part of my whole collection thing, is just like, I like the way it looks. I like to, I don't know, collect different things. Or just the other main source I get is just thrift stores. I go to a lot of thrift stores. I worked at a thrift store for a long time when I was a teenager, for 4 or 5 years. That's part of how I got such a big collection of like all those random games.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, you never know what you're going to find there. Yeah, you always see sort of like, or you see sort of ones that you had years ago.
Yeah.
As a kid, or like those 90s ones. They are the best place to find those kind of ones. Yeah. Yeah, I usually just sort of Google I think for 11s is always like tea and cake game, and just see what comes up sometimes. I think of like the genre or like a theme of thing. I think, oh, has anyone made a game like that? Which is where I found that awful biscuit game thing, which is terrible, which is like the worst one ever. But that was like food-based games. I was like searching.
But no, I wonder, because like going back to like not being able to work out whether a game's real or not, I think we do tend to get so sucked into games that are based on IPs that we know. So as soon as you get a game that isn't based on a TV show or a comic book or anything like that, you're like, well, what? No, that can't be a thing.
Some of those games that you pick, it's just like something I've never heard of, never would have thought of. Those make for some really great episodes, just, you know, out of curiosity and silliness. It's just kind of highly entertaining to hear those games.
And I think because we're not ever like trying to pick like the latest games, we don't buy it just because it's new. Like, we're doing episodes on games that are from the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, like whatever. It just doesn't matter. It's all down to the spreadsheet.
At one point you played, what's the mushroom picking game? Forget the name of it.
Fungi. Although Fungi. I think in America it's called Morals, I believe.
Perfect. My friend, not too long ago, we, you know, had some free time, and he was like, hey, I heard there's some morel mushrooms growing up in the mountains near here. I was like, okay, isn't that something we've never done before? But it was like, you know, a week after listening to your guys' episodes, I was like, all right, what do we do? And it's like, wait, I think we need a wicker basket and some sticks. That's about all I know. So we couldn't find a wicker basket, so we got a little metal one, and they're, you know, walking around out in the woods for a couple hours just like poking through bushes with a stick, and I was like, maybe I need a longer stick. How do I get the stick again? I was almost putting your board game into real life application, so pretty funny.
Did you find many? Did you cook them with cider and butter?
I lost. He found two. I didn't find any.
Oh no.
He said he was going to cook them up. He didn't say cider, but I should have recommended that for sure.
That is a good game to learn the names of different mushrooms. I can never pronounce them properly, but yeah, you can. Yeah, it's very educational sometimes.
Well, you say that, but I wouldn't, just from playing the game, I wouldn't see a random mushroom and be like, ah, yes, that's the Capelius capracadabra.
If you play it enough, I'm sure there are people out there that know what they are.
Yes. Okay, right, where are we at? Christmas Beach, obviously. Have you painted your figures yet?
I got a practice one and I painted it, and then I did paint one of my Bunkers and Badass figures, the Psycho, painted it to look like Good Boy.
Oh, yes.
Gave him a tie-dye t-shirt.
That's so cool. And the string on the buzzards and everything.
Yeah, you guys totally inspired that, listening to that episode, talking about your painting challenge. And I definitely didn't have the same experience at the store buying paints as you did. You sound like you had a good time and they were really helpful. Yeah. And I only got attention when they're like, are you ready to check out? No, I'm still looking. And none of the paints had prices on them. And like, how much is this one? And they're like, oh, I don't know. I can ring it up. I could scan it for you. Okay. Eventually bought a box. They had a whole bunch of starter sets up on the top shelf that I didn't see. I got a good selection of paints.
Go ahead, do you have like a lot of Games Workshop shops out in anywhere in your area or anywhere? Like, is that a thing?
Yeah,
in America,
I think so.
Games Workshop shops? Because I feel like there's so many over here. And we're like a much like smaller area, but like every town has a foot. It's a big thing. It's like a really popular thing, like that brand.
Yeah, the one that we have local, it's called Wild Things, I think. And they have a huge selection of games, all sorts of figures and paints, and a place where you can, you know, sit down and play games too. So I feel like they have those about any town that you go to. And I don't live in a huge place. We only have one, but there was a couple at some point.
Wow. They're always like really busy as well. Like,
I didn't even know this, but Games Workshop is British. I just assumed it was American.
Well, they also, I don't know if we mentioned this at the time as well, the magazine that they have, White Dwarf.
Yeah.
That's still going, which I didn't realize. And it's basically just loads of amazing photos of people's like painted figures and like all these amazing like landscapes and things that they've made. I mean, I did used to get, like, this is years ago, I had a few of them, but I just looked at the pictures, didn't read any of it. But that is still going because that is in a local newsagent's around the corner right now, at like White Dwarf. Like, you wouldn't think sort of nowadays that they'd still be like printing those kind of a magazine like that. But yeah, it's still going. You know, to go online, they would think it would all be online now, but it must be a market out there still for those kind of things. But yeah, but they always look so amazing in the magazines, don't they? I can always think, I'd love to be able to paint stuff and make stuff like this, but it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. They should do like one episode a year of White Dwarf that's just regular people's paintings and stuff. It's just like, okay, these are all the professionals, but here's one feature where just your bog standard average pleb, and it's all just these like slightly shitty sort of, oh, here's my thing that I painted and I tried to do this.
that's like nailed it, but painting figures. That's what you need.
I was pretty proud of my figures that I painted until I started to take pictures of them. And it's like every time I took a picture, it was just like, man, I could see all the flaws, all the details. So just like hold it at arm's length. Yeah, that looks great.
Yeah. I found it when I was taking pictures of my Aemir figure. I'm just trying to catch, like, as I described what I'd done, you know, like, oh, I'd done this wash and I'd done these details. But in the picture, it's just like, you can't see any of that. It just looks, but never mind. Trust me, people. I did do exactly what I said I did.
So Games Workshop, is that the proper name?
Yeah.
So they run
that makes Warhammer.
Well, the Warhammers, all the Warhammer stuff, that is the company that produces it. So they all have their own Games Workshop, like brand paints and you name it. It's the whole shop designed, you know, all the like bushes and walls and buildings and stuff. It's all Games Workshop branded stuff. So that all the shops are Games Workshop with all of their stuff in it. It's just endless. I mean, I think it's quite expensive, but there's always tons of people. There's always each in the window. There's always an amazing display of like this, like, you know, castle with like tons of figures, like amazingly painted and stuff usually. But yeah, I just surprised there's so many of them.
Okay. Right. Next big thing, the Minnesota 34 celebrities that you'd invite to game night. Talk us through it, John. Who are you having for game night?
All right. Well, first off, it would have to be Robin Williams, and we would definitely play Jumanji. Like, I've just been obsessed with that game ever since that movie came out. And it was great that you had mentioned that Robin Williams was a gamer. And I could just imagine him. Can you imagine him like being the dungeon master or even just a player, just with all the voices and just all the, you know, super animated and excited. I think that, you know, any game
he's everything Robin Williams plays in the gamer.
Let's see. I put Andy Kaufman. I don't know if you guys know Andy Kaufman. He's a comedian from the 80s. Was on Saturday Night Live briefly. Just very super awkward, uncomfortable comedian. It doesn't do the typical jokes. It pretty much makes you feel bad for him or makes you confused or just like,
yeah.
I just think his dynamic, especially with Robin Williams, could be pretty great. And just like, you got to have that socially awkward style person there just to balance it out, I guess. guess. And I also would think in Carl Sagan, just because he seems like a great character, just to, you know, someone to have around. Super smart scientist guy, it's probably very logical, follows the rules and can help explain just about anything. And then of course, yeah, James Earl Jones could be the narrator, read the instructions.
you'd get really, him to just talk through every move, wouldn't you?
And then he rolled the die. It came up as a 6. But if I do get those people together, definitely inviting both of you, because I don't think I could have a proper game night with celebrities or with anybody and not invite you guys.
No.
Open invitation.
I think you'd find this very frustrating to play with.
But then we would have to frag the game afterwards, and we could only play what was on the spreadsheet coming up.
You know, sort of like, it's rules. That's James Earl Jones would just have to suck it up. Hilarious to play Klingon Challenge with the Next Generation crew. I think that would be... Okay, who do you think would be the best Next Generation crew member at playing board games, and who would be the worst?
I feel like the best, personally, maybe would be Commander Data. Mm. I think the worst would be Captain Picard.
No, just I think imagine Worf. Him. I don't... Worf wouldn't get it. Worf wouldn't... He'd be like, I fail to see why this is amusing. Or whatever.
No, it would be like Deanna Troi would be like, I sense that my turn is coming up.
She'd be good. She'd be able to tell if you were like lying or having a plot. Yeah. She'd be no good at werewolf. She'd just be like, I'm sensing it's you. Whoa. Part of your job is to maintain an engaged train set. Tell us more.
All right. Let's see. So we have a scene that's set up, and it's, I know, been there for at least 30 years, but I, you know, get to do some of the general maintenance on it, like replanting the tree, so to speak. Like, there's, like you were saying with the Warhammer stuff, like it's a lot of the similar, like, you know, identical stuff. You get like the little bits of sand that are like $5 for a little container. You get a little bag of moss that make bushes out of. But, you know, there's been so many times where I was working on that, and, you know, it's in this glass display case, and I have to like stand up on a little step stool and lean over, and I can't like, you know, put any weight on it because it's just kind of all chicken wire and plaster.
Nice.
And, you know, all the train tracks are embedded in all that. Really well done. It's just hard to work on. But so many times I just kept thinking, like, man, if I had some little figures, could make a little sort of a game here. And at one point,
have you ever been tempted to just hide, you know, like a Warhammer figure or a meeple or something just somewhere on the train set?
Definitely. I think there's like the engaged people are like super, super tiny. So, like, trying to paint them, like, be nearly impossible, I would think. But there's one that I, you know, put way up on the ledge of a cliff, and you can't really see him, but it's like almost like a guy who's about ready to jump off. Just little jokes like that.
Nice.
Mark, you were talking about a game that involved engaged trains and how it'd be good to, like, you know, if you could, you know, plot out your route and have them stop at different areas, and you have to pick up passengers and avoid crossing tracks and doing all the switchbacks and stuff. That's totally possible. It would take a lot of engineering, but some of the basics are stuff that I've been working on, where you have the train go around the track and then it stops at the station. Then you can have another train go a different way. And then it's all with, you know, sensors and timers and relays. Not very portable.
You have to make it would need to look like amazing, like with all the landscape and everything, you know, it's sort of that realistic style, though. I can just imagine that. Yeah, it would take a lot of planning, pre-planning, but I'm surprised there isn't something based on that out there. But like, as you say, yeah, it's just the complexities of it, probably. But that would be cool, definitely. Be good.
Sorry, I'm just Googling engaged train sets now. Sorry, I've fallen down a train black hole.
Oh, there's so many different types and so many different, things you can do.
I've been down that same black hole there. I was trying to figure out how to get some of the stuff working, and I joined a forum online for model train hobbyists, and those people just, like, that's what they do. That's their thing. They dedicated their lives to it.
And it's having the space for it as well, isn't it? Because you'd want it to, you know, you need that massive sort of table area or a space to build it up. Wow. There's I'm ending up on eBay again. You can buy like a full, like the set for like $2,000.
Wow.
Like the field with everything in it, you know, all the tracks and stuff. Maybe that's the way to go. Buy a really expensive starter pack. With it all half done for you. All painted, already there. I don't know how that would be delivered, but if you just get the full thing, sort of the basics done for you, and then you can sort of play around with it. Yeah, that is really cool. It's also, Scalextrics is also something that could be turned into like some kind of game thing. An easier thing to set up. Get all sorts of Scalextrics stuffs now. I went down that rabbit hole recently, just looking online at Scalextrics stuff. And you can get like a themed, I mean, you can get themed everything, can't you? But, you know, like James Bond cars and stuff, you you know, you can get all that kind of thing. They're quite expensive as well. I think you get like the Batman, Superman, all the Marvel stuff, themed cars and things for Scalextrics. But yeah, a whole another area of vehicle-based games. That's a whole new genre.
But that sort of brings us to the end of your listener's journey.
That is amazing. That is, right. It's reminded me of a lot of things, actually. I completely forgot so many different things.
Yeah. And I guess, the final one, just notice there's a doorbell sound at the end of the episode. It's meant to be like a Tannoy announcement, not a doorbell.
Oh, okay.
Maybe no, it does sound like a doorbell. Does everyone think doorbell? Oh, no.
It does sound like a doorbell. Yeah, right. It does.
Yeah. Well, that's the people leaving and the next guests ringing the doorbell for the next
that's
game.
That's a brilliant way of thinking of it, yeah.
But yeah. Well, okay, John, do you have any final questions for it? Like, it's just, thank you so much for sticking through however many hours of organized fun.
I feel like I'd have a bunch more questions, but can't think of anything that we haven't really covered. There's a few other, I don't know, like Mark, I've been watching some Doctor Who inspired by you. I've made it through the first season of the classic Doctor.
Wow. Well, like the 60s ones you started.
Yeah.
Really? Oh, excellent. What, how are you finding it?
You know, pretty good. There was one episode in particular with like the cavemen where I feel like I had seen it before, but then I think it was just totally ripped off by Star Trek or something similar.
Well, yeah, there's probably quite a lot of similarities, but it's, yeah. Oh, that's amazing. That's brilliant. There's lots of sort of Doctor Who themed games as well. That's a whole thing, isn't there, as well? Don't know if you've seen any of those ones out there, but yeah. Are you going to try and continue through, or is it like, because they are very slow, those early ones, aren't they? Sometimes they're a struggle to get through.
Painful.
I think they're pretty great for, you know, like for what it was. Like you said, it was before Star Trek, and it just, I feel like a lot of things have taken influence from it. And I like the acting. It's, a little campy, but I'm totally into that, so that's fine. But the Doctor, his little giggle sometimes is like, I can't even think of it, but I think that it's pretty silly, kind of Weasley little laugh.
Yeah, yeah, they're brilliant. Oh, that's amazing. You've started to watch those. Yeah. Well, if you're making your way through, there's a lot to get through.
I was listening to the first episode of To Watch Who, but you had started ahead of where I was at. So I'll get back to that after I make it a little bit further in.
Yes. Yeah. We're still going on that one. Yeah. That's a lot of fun to do. That's really cool. Got someone to watch Doctor Who. Yes.
I just loaded all, like, looked on my iTunes. 6.1 days. That's how long all of our episodes add up to. So there you go. 6.1 of your days that you will never get back, John.
Definitely going to track down some of these ones that you've mentioned. We should definitely give them a try. I'm going to see if I can eBay some of these ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And give them a go. Then we can frag them and see how they turn out in practice. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, so I think it's so easy to just be like a passive listener. So thank you for just making those notes and for having those questions and for having those comments. Because it's really made, like, I don't know, it just makes it worthwhile, doesn't it? That people listen and that people enjoy it. And people, I know this, I don't want this to turn into a, oh, we're so great. But, you know, if we can have a positive impact on people's day, then that's job done, isn't it? That's why we do it, guys.
You guys do have great positive impact. Like, there's like a grumpy dude that I work with, and there's like been times where he's just like, cursing and grumbling just all day long.
Yeah.
And it's just like, he'll like look over at me and say something, and I got you guys talking in my ear. And like, there was one time where I was laughing, and he had said something right about that point, and he thought that he made me laugh. And I didn't have the heart to tell him that I wasn't even paying attention to what he was saying.
Oh, bless. Well, I hope we don't get you into trouble.
Oh, no. To kind of summarize my listening adventure, are you guys familiar with the NeverEnding Story movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I felt like I was that kid reading that book upstairs in the attic, and you guys were the characters inside the book. And there was like so many times where, like in like Kids on Brooms, where I think that's where it was. Phil, you rolled a 20, and your excitement just like was unbelievable. And that was like the moment where it cuts to that kid in the attic. He's like, yes, shaking his head. And that was me.
Oh,
lots of good times. Lots of good times.
That's so sweet. Like, I read, like, that's just really kind. That's just, that's really nice of you to say. Feeling some emotions. I was like,
oh, you guys are great. It's just, I think that your energy, your banter, your dialogue, all that is just super entertaining, super funny. You know, sometimes it's just completely casual and chill, and other times it's just laughing my ass off so much I gotta take a break. But
because I think we don't like plan jokes, do we? We don't plan specific funny things that we try to say.
I'm not told anything that's going on usually or what we're about to play.
Yeah. I think that's a great dynamic though. Like, for example, when you were on the Print Info Adventure Co., I guess it was Board Game Community, doing Bunkers and Badass, I think Mark, your character Robin, at the very end, he was like, well, I was just here to look around, but yeah, sure, I'll go with you guys on to the next adventure. And I think that was, I don't know, that dynamic is just pretty great. I love it.
Well, thank you for putting the time in, and thank you for listening, and thank you to everyone for listening, because you make our day. Right, I'm gonna do the endings bit. Right, I've been Phil.
I've been Mark.
I've been John.
And remember, non relinquim in arca reperculo. You can find us on Facebook at Organized Fun Pod. You can find us on X at Fun Organized. Thanks for listening. Bye, Ludophiles. Bye.
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 Awesome.
Now is the time when we stop. Good night.